So today I'm hosting Birgul Demirtas, a professor of international relations at the Turkish German University in Istanbul. Birgul Demirtas's studies concentrate on Balkan politics, amongst others. So we will discuss Turkish foreign policy towards the Balkans, the perception of the Balkan region in the Turkish public opinion, and whether there are any changes in Turkish foreign policy following the May presidential and parliamentary elections.
Birgul Demirtas is professor of international relations at the Department of Political Science and International Relations of Turkish German University in Istanbul. Her studies concentrate on Turkish foreign policy, Balkan politics, German foreign policy, Turkish political parties and migration, city diplomacy and gender. Between 2019 and 2021, Birgul was the managing editor of the academic peer-reviewed Journal of International Relations. She has articles published in Southeast European and Black Sea Studies, Journal of Balkan and Near Eastern Studies, the Turkish Yearbook of International Relations, and many other journals.
So, Birgul, in your PhD and later on in your publications, you focused on the role of Germany and Turkey in the Yugoslav wars of the 1990s and their aftermath. Would you say that your own academic and professional preferences in this regard reflect the interest that the Turkish citizens in general have towards the Yugoslav wars and how everything that happened during the 1990s shaped the image of our region here in the Turkish society?
Thank you very much for your invitation and thank you for the question. In fact, the main security issue in global politics in the 1990s was the wars in former Yugoslavia. And in my PhD thesis, I argued that Germany and Turkey were among the most affected countries by the end of the Cold War. Germany got united and Turkey had some difficulties with its identity that was established during the Cold War. You know, Turkey had a very clear identity during the bipolar system. It was part of the Western Bloc and the Soviet Union was the main enemy. But when the Soviet Union collapsed, Turkey needed to find a new orientation for itself. Turkey needed to change its foreign policy. And at that very time, the wars in former Yugoslavia started. And I tried to understand how Turkey pursued its foreign policy towards the conflict in former Yugoslavia. And I also tried to understand it through the prism of Turkey's new global position. I argued that, I claimed that when Turkey was trying to determine its foreign policy towards the conflict, in the Balkans, at the same time, it was trying to find a new identity and a new location for itself in the global politics. I mean, mainstream public opinion was that, you know, Muslim peoples in the Balkans were suffering a lot. You know, they were the main victims during the conflicts, and there was much affection, much empathy towards Muslim groups in the Balkans. And when we think about Turkey and the Balkans, we need to remember that, you know, Turkey is part of the region. Therefore, Turkish foreign policy towards the Balkans is something different from, like, Turkish foreign policy towards Africa or Turkey's relations with Latin America. You know, Turkey is part of the Balkans. Therefore, when something happens in the Balkans, I mean, it has a clear impact on the Turkish domestic politics, on Turkish foreign policy as well. And what makes Turkey different from so many different actors in the Balkans, is that historical and humanitarian ties with the Balkans. You know, Turkey is part of the region. It is one of the important countries in the Balkan region. When something happens in Belgrade, in Sofia, in Kırcaali, in Sarajevo, in Podgorica, it has a clear impact on Turkey because we have so many Balkan immigrants within the country. I mean, these humanitarian ties are so important, I would argue.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you maybe something precisely in this regard, because according to some sources, almost 20% of the Turkish population is of Balkan origin. And to what extent does this influence the Turkish decision-making policy towards the region, particularly, you know, when it comes to foreign policy? To what extent this foreign policy, and as you say, it is partially not even foreign policy, has an internal political dynamic in Turkey?
As you stated, according to many academic sources, at least 20% of Turkish population has some sort of Balkan origin. You know, some people migrated from the Balkans to the Ottoman Empire during the later stages of the Ottoman Empire, during the Balkan Wars, and later on, some migrated after the Turkish Republic was established. Some migrated in the later years, in the 1980s and in the 1990s. And many of those Balkan immigrants kept their ties with their origins in the Balkans. I mean, they have this Balkan identity. For example, I know some people in Turkey they are of Bosniak origin, and they have never been to Bosnia-Herzegovina, or they have never been to abroad. They have never been to the Balkans. But still, within the family, they keep the language. You know, when they talk to each other within the family, they speak in the Bosniak language or Serbian, Croatian, Bosniak language. I mean, that is important. You know, Balkan identity is kept in Turkey among the Balkan immigrants. And the second dimension is the Balkan immigrants in Turkey are quite organized. I mean, they have tens of different associations and foundations. Balkan associations, Rumeli associations, association of people coming from Prizren. You know, some associations are more general, like the associations of the Balkans, or Rumeli associations, but some of them are more specific, you know, like this one, the association of people coming from Prizren. They have, you know, another association in Istanbul. We have also some other associations as well, like people of Caucasian origin. They also have their associations, but the Balkan people are the most organized. They have these non-governmental organizations. And through these non-governmental organizations, they try to have an impact on Turkish internal politics and Turkish foreign policy. That means when something happens in the Balkans, like the assimilation policy towards the Turkish minority in Bulgaria in the 1980s, or the problems of Turkish minority in Greece, you know, when they have problems and they experience problems, or the wars in former Yugoslavia in the 1990s, these NGOs become quite active and they push the Turkish decision makers to implement an active foreign policy, you know, to do something to stop the assimilation, to do something to stop the conflict. And these Balkan immigrants are, they are, of course, distributed all around Turkey. But they are also concentrated in some of the Turkish provinces, like Bursa, for example, in Marmara region, or Edirne, a city just in the border with Greece and Bulgaria, or Izmir, for example, in the Aegean region. I also work on city diplomacy in Turkey. And when I work on city diplomacy of Turkish provinces, local diplomacy in Turkey, then I noticed that, you know, those provinces with a concentration of Balkan immigrants, they focus especially on the Balkan cities. You know, they try to establish sister city agreements. You know, they try to pursue some international projects with those cities in the Balkans. Therefore, you know, Balkan immigrants have an impact on the city diplomacy of Turkey.
You mentioned a lot of influence on in the soft diplomacy, so to speak, field. Can we say that this groupings, organization of Balkan, so to speak, diaspora of Turkish citizens have Balkan origin, Turkish citizens to be precise, have also an impact on major, you know, foreign policy lines of Turkey in the region? And if yes, can you cite maybe some examples when their involvement was important in this regard?
For example, during the wars in former Yugoslavia, you know, those immigrants and their associations had a clear impact on Turkish foreign policy. When I was writing my PhD thesis, I had interviews with a former president. I had interviews with a former minister of foreign affairs, and they told me that, you know, they were affected by the influence of the Balkan immigrants. For example, a former minister told me that, you know, when an Albanian, you know, a Kosovo Albanian high level leader visited Turkey, they had the hesitancy, you know, to accept him officially because of the conjecture. But because of the influence of the, you know, Albanian origin Turkish people, you know, they had to accept him. When something happens in the Balkans, when the Turkish minorities or, you know, Muslim peoples were negatively affected, it is impossible for the Turkish decision makers to remain silent, you know, because of, you know, domestic reasons as well. They need to respond to it in an active way. And we also need to remember that some of these Balkan immigrants become ministers. I mean, such a dynamic is something specific to Turkey, I would say. Of course, you know, the European Union is a very important actor in the Balkans. Of course, Russia is important. China has an increasing influence, especially in terms of the economic dynamics. But, you know, these humanitarian ties are specific to Turkey, I would argue. Therefore, you know, Turkey has a kind of special ties with the Balkans.
Yeah, thank you. You mentioned the EU, and this leads me to my next question. How does Turkey look at the EU and NATO membership of the Western Balkan countries? It's looking at it superficially, it seems that Turkey is in favor of both. And why is that in your view?
As you stated, Turkey is supporting the Europeanization of the Balkan countries. Turkey is supporting both the NATO membership and the EU membership of the Balkan countries. And that is not also something related to Turkey's EU process. You know, Turkey's membership process is kind of stalled at the moment. The negotiations are not continuing. You know, on paper, they are continuing, but in practice, in fact, Turkey-EU relations are not proceeding well. They are some difficult problems. But even those times when Turkey has difficulties in its own Europeanization process, you know, Turkey continues to support the European Union membership and NATO membership of the Balkan countries. It is because of the fact that, you know, peace and stability in the Balkans is also being welcomed by Turkey. You know, Turkish leadership is aware of the fact that, you know, if all the Balkan countries become EU members, and if those countries who want to be NATO members, if they can get the NATO membership, that would contribute to the stability and peace in the region. Then we would kind of contribute to the establishment of a positive peace in the region. And we can just get away from the, we can have the transition from the negative peace and to the positive peace. Then the problems are between Kosovo and Serbia, the problems within Bosnia and Herzegovina would be kind of more easily solved. Turkey is aware of the potential of the European Union, especially. Therefore, even if Turkey has difficult times with the European Union, it is supporting the Europeanization process. With regard to the NATO membership, of course, Turkey has much more influence. Turkey is not an EU member. Therefore, you know, of course, Turkey can support the EU membership of the Western Balkan countries, but how much influence can Turkey have on Brussels if Turkey is not within the club, within the EU club? But with regard to the EU, with regard to the NATO membership, of course, Turkey is an important actor. Now, nowadays, with regard to the Sweden's application to NATO, I mean, we see how important a role Turkey is playing. Turkey is a NATO member since 1952. And it means, you know, whenever the Balkan countries wanted to become NATO members, think about the membership process of Bulgaria, Romania, Albania, North Macedonia, Turkey has supported all of them from the very beginning till the very end of it. It is because of the, you know, Turkish argument that, you know, NATO membership and EU membership would contribute to the regional peace and stability.
Maybe to go more into granular activities of Turkey in the region, if we can see the work of some Turkish agencies such as TİKA in rebuilding and or reconstructing old architectural historical sites from Ottoman era in the Balkans. Would you consider these actions as part of this soft power approach? Some would even say, going back to the one of the former ministers of foreign affairs, the neo-Ottoman approach to the Turkish foreign policy in the Balkans.
Turkish foreign policy in general and Turkish foreign policy towards the Balkans in particular has become more multidimensional since the 1990s. I mean, the process has started before the Justice and Development Party came into power. I mean, we can take the end of the Cold War as the important turning point in Turkish foreign policy. But of course, in the recent years, since the 2000s, you know, the level of multidimensionalism has increased. And now Turkey does not have just kind of, you know, political relationship, but Turkish foreign policy is much more multidimensional. You have given the example of TİKA, Turkish International Cooperation Agency. We can give the example of Yunus Emre Cultural Institutes. We can give the example of Diyanet facilities in the Balkans, Maarif Foundation, you know, Turkish scholarship project, you know, giving scholarships to successful Balkan students. You know, all of them are part of this multidimensional Turkish foreign policy. Whether it is a symbol of a kind of neo-Ottoman foreign policy or not, I have a different argument. I think, you know, what do we mean by neo-Ottomanism? I think in the Serbian context, sometimes it is so much exaggerated. You know, there are some Serbian colleagues, there are some Serbian experts who say that, you know, Turkey is trying to resurrect the Ottoman Empire. Turkey has still these ideals of, you know, recreating, you know, the Ottoman hegemony in the region. I think that is not the case. Of course, you know, the Ottoman history has an impact on Turkish foreign policy. Like, you know, the British Empire, the history of the British Empire has an impact on the current British foreign policy. Therefore, of course, we cannot think about Turkish foreign policy, you know, without remembering the historical context. You know, I have just given the various examples of the humanitarian ties. You know, there is the Ottoman legacy, and the humanitarian ties are part of this Ottoman legacy. I would argue that when we try to understand Turkish foreign policy towards the region, we need to interpret Turkey as a middle power in the current global context. I mean, Turkey is a middle power country. And as a middle power country, with regard to its economic size, with regard to its geographical size, with regard to its demographic size, and also with regard to its military power, Turkey wants to be influential in the neighboring regions. Turkey wants to have good ties, and Turkey wants to contribute to the stability and peace in the neighboring regions. And, you know, Turkey's activities and Turkey's multidimensional foreign policy in the Balkans is mainly related to the middle power position of Turkey. Now, the past, the historical background, of course, plays a role. We cannot exclude it. But, you know, I would argue that the current government or the previous governments do not have any ideal of trying to create a kind of Ottoman hegemony in the Balkans. You know, Turkish foreign policy is a very pragmatic one. You know, Turkey's current leadership, I think they also think that, I mean, it is not possible to recreate the Ottoman times. But also we need to differentiate between the rhetoric and practice of Turkish foreign policy. You know, when you just listen to the discourse of Turkish politicians, sometimes you might get the feeling that, you know, it is kind of, it includes some neo-Ottomanist elements. It was very clear, for example, at the discourse of Ahmet Davutoğlu when he was the foreign minister, then when he was the prime minister, you know, some of his speeches were full of some kind of, you know, Ottoman connotations, and his speech in Sarajevo in 2009, was not forgotten in the Balkans. I know he mentioned, you know, reintegrating the Balkan countries, but in fact, you know, some of this rhetoric has something to do with Turkish domestic politics. The discourse of Turkish politicians with regard to foreign policy issues has two dimensions. One dimension is related to domestic politics, and one dimension is related to, you know, international politics. Especially during the election times, during the election campaigns, sometimes the Ottoman Empire is referred a lot, and there are so many connotations with regard to the, you know, the good old times in the Ottoman Empire kind of thing. But sometimes it is just related to domestic politics. You know, Turkish politicians are addressing themselves to the Turkish electorate. But we need to look at the practice. For example, TIKA, you know, so many Balkan experts and Balkan politicians claim that, you know, TIKA is just renovating the old Ottoman mosques. You know, when they talk on or when they write on TIKA, they just focus on TIKA and its restoration of the Ottoman mosques. But in fact, when we look at the practice, when we look at the actual data, what TIKA is doing in the Balkans is much more complicated. Yes, TIKA is renovating some of the Ottoman mosques. I mean, it should do. But in fact, it has been also giving so much aid to the hospitals in the Balkans, to the schools, you know, to the farmers, you know, it is much more multidimensional. But when we say that, you know, TIKA is just interested in the Ottoman mosques, it is just renovating them, I think it's a reflection of some, prototypes, you know, some prejudices. Because, you know, some of the Balkan intellectuals and politicians, you know, when they think about Turkish foreign policy, you know, they try to frame it in this so-called neo-Ottomanist perspective. But we need to look at the actual data.
Yes, it is really important that you explain this for our public, because I must admit there is a lot of prejudice when analyzing the Turkish foreign policy in the Balkans, and this is a big part of it. But what you have just said, maybe you want to go to the next question. I'm interested if there are some red lines for Turkey when it comes to its foreign policy in the Balkans, something that is definitely not acceptable for Ankara. You know, Turkey has its red lines when it comes to the issue of Cyprus, Azerbaijan, so on, not to quote other examples. But is there anything similar in the Western Balkans region?
I think the red line is the situation of Turkish minority in the Balkans, as well as the status of the Muslim peoples, you know, Kin people in the region. In some countries in the region, there are Turkish minority living, like in Greece, in Bulgaria, in North Macedonia, and in Kosovo. And, you know, the legal status of these people is quite important. And the second important group is the other Muslim peoples in the region, like the Bosniaks in Bosnia-Herzegovina, and Albanians and other Muslim groups as well. They are also seen as kind of kin groups in the region, because, you know, these Muslim peoples, like the Albanians and Bosniaks, they have become Muslims during the Ottoman Empire. And that's why, you know, the Islam practiced in the Balkan countries by these Muslim people and the Islam practiced in Turkey are so similar. There are, you know, there is this religious and cultural similarity. Therefore, these people, Bosniaks and Albanians, they are seen as kin group. And the status and legal rights of the Turkish minority and of these Muslim peoples, I think this is the red line. If their legal status is kind of changed, or if they have real problems, if they face discrimination, if they face violence, if there is conflict, then that is the red line for Turkey. But of course, when something happens to those people, when these people suffer, when they have a security problem, then, you know, Turkish leadership thinks that it needs to do something. It needs to be an active to end the conflict or to end the security problem.
That's very interesting what you're pointing out to in our researchers. Srđan Hercigunja and Vuk Vuksanović in their paper on Turkish foreign policy towards the Western Balkans talk a lot about this dichotomy and between the, if we can call it, psychological, emotional and rational, whereby on the emotional side it's very much this relationship towards, as you call them, kin groups in the Balkans and states that matters, whereas maybe from the rational point of view, sometimes the support is given to the, you know, biggest Western Balkans country, Serbia, and because of the economic relations and everything, which of the two would prevail in a hypothetical situation where it has to choose for Turkey? Affinity towards kinship groups, as you mentioned, this is a red line, as you say, or desire to have good relations with the economic bulwark of the Western Balkans.
But saying that, of course, Turkish foreign policy is not just based on religion, or is not just based on these kinship groups. I mean, it is much more than that. And I just would like to emphasize that, you know, Turkey is a very pragmatic actor in the Balkans. Of course, you know, Turkey's special ties with the Turkish minority and also Muslim peoples. But in fact, Turkish leadership also, you know, Turkey's current government also argues that, you know, we have cultural similarities with all the countries, with all the peoples in the region. And the increasing ties between Turkey and Serbia in the recent years should be noted as well. And they also have some similarities in their foreign policy approaches. Think about, for example, how Serbia and Turkey are acting towards the Russian war in Ukraine. Both of them criticize the Russian invasion. Both of them give support to Ukraine, and they say that the Ukrainian territorial integrity should be protected. But they do not take part in the European Union sanctions. There are good ties between the Turkish leadership and Serbian leadership. Therefore, you know, when we think about Turkish foreign policy towards the region, it is not just related to the factor of the religion. You know, Turkey is not just trying to have good relations with the Muslim peoples, that's all. That is not the case, you know. From the very beginning, Turkey has been trying to have good relations with Macedonia since 1991. And Turkey-Serbia relationship is another example that Turkish foreign policy in the region is not based on neo-Ottomanism, but it is based on pragmatism, and it is based on the global conjecture, and of course it is based on the characteristics of the current domestic agency in Turkey.
Well, thank you very much for making this nuance. Maybe as a final question, I would like to ask you, so we had the May presidential and parliamentary elections in Turkey. Should we expect any changes when it comes to its foreign policy towards the Balkans in general, or towards, for that matter, some specific country in the region?
I do not expect any kind of radical change in Turkish foreign policy towards the region, because, you know, the same political party, the Justice and Development Party, has won the elections, and they have the majority in the Turkish parliament together with its allies. Since the president is the same and the government is the same, I think the same parameters of Turkish foreign policy would continue in the Balkans. I do not expect to see any kind of changes. But I can just add that, you know, Balkans is still important on the agenda of Turkish foreign policy. You know, Turkey as a middle power actor now has some difficulties in the Middle East. We know the situation in Syria, we know the situation in Iraq. Therefore, you know, Turkey's capability to be an effective actor in the Middle East is quite limited. And with regard to the Caucasus, then there is the influence of the Russian Federation. Therefore, you know, Turkey cannot be so much effective in the Caucasus region as well. But with regard to the Balkans, I think, you know, Turkey's potential to be an effective regional country is much bigger compared to other regions. Therefore, I would say that, you know, Turkey would try, the current government would try to be an effective actor in the Balkans region. But there are so many challenges in the region. Let us see whether Turkey would do something with regard to the problems between Serbia and Kosovo. That is an important question. And let us see whether Turkey would try to kind of refresh this trilateral mechanism among Turkey, Serbia, and Bosnia-Herzegovina. You know, Turkey had an initiative that was started in 2009. But, you know, in the recent years, it is not so lively. And whether there would be kind of new initiatives or the former initiatives will be kind of refreshed, these are important question marks for us. we need to follow Turkish forces, first of all, very closely, I think.
Oh, thank you very much, Birgul. This has been very interesting and informative for myself, and I'm certain for our listeners. Thank you very much for joining us in our Lighthouse podcast.